Welcome to Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen. This is Tuesday, July the 2nd. And you talk about important days in American history. Every single day at this point is really an important day in American history. And I think what you're going to find is changes that are going to be, first, enough to drive Donald Trump insane. Right now, Donald's jumping up and down, thinking that he won something. Now, it's true, he got the Supreme Court to go along with one of the most idiotic concepts that has ever passed in front of 9 Supreme Court justices. Understand that the decision that they came up with yesterday was so ridiculous and so bizarre that the only way anybody could have possibly expected this to happen is by looking at how long it was taking for the court to actually tell us what it was that they wanted to do, because they waited until the last day so that they could get out of Dodge as fast as possible after producing this decision, which is just ridiculous. And by the way, we've had a lot of these decisions that are ridiculous. You can go back and look at the end of affirmative action. You can go back and look at the end of Roe versus Wade. You can go back and look at, just in the last few days, the Chevron overturning, which, believe me, and I've said this and I'm going to keep saying it because it's one of the most essential things for people to understand in this country, that the end of the Chevron deference idea, again, Chevron deference, that the agencies in the United States government would make decisions about implementing laws written by Congress in any case where it was uncertain as to what was meant by the law. And of course, I gave the whole story about the 5G towers and the airplanes at airports and the possible disruption of landing instructions to airplanes. And the FCC and the FAA had to work this out. Imagine if this were stuffed in front of some judge. How about Clarence Thomas? What would he know? Believe me, planes would be falling out of the skies. This is absolute lunacy. All of what they've done, they are overturning precedents as fast as they can get to them. And in the beginning, remember, they said, well, Roe v. Wade is established law. We're not going to touch it. And believe me, this is not about abortion. It's not about any individual issue. It's about how the Supreme Court works. And it's about what these justices, these extreme right-wing, basically neo-Nazi justices. And the reason I say it that way, I know it's pretty over the line, but listen, the people who they are working for, you know, Leonard Leo, these people from the Federalist Society, these are neo-Nazis. Now, that's a fact. So, you know, you can call these judges that are now justices anything you want, but they come from this neo-Nazi background, and it's very sick, it's very ill, and it is tied to another thing that I've talked about, which is this Project 2025, and I promise you, you must get your hands on Project 2025. Now, you may start reading it and look at this 900-page document and say, This isn't what I do. I don't read 900 page documents, almost 1,000 to tell you the truth. And you could say, I don't do that and walk off and don't worry about it. But that's okay, because you are in for quite a roller coaster ride in this country in a very short period of time. And it's not even just connected to the Supreme Court, but it's also very much connected to this presidential race that we're coming into here in November. And let me say, and in a way, this is extremely exciting. And in a way, I'm sorry to have to say this, because let me back up and tell you that I really do appreciate and love Joe Biden. Joe Biden has been outstanding for this country. He has been so important. Truly, he has. Everything that he did from the beginning, starting with COVID, and then getting into all the child care credits that he created, which helped people to take care of their children when they were at work. Now they're gone now, but believe me, they'll be coming back under the Democratic Party, which is going to take office in January of 2025. And I'll explain to you how that's going to happen in a way that I don't think that you're going to be able to have much to disagree with, although don't get me wrong, anybody can disagree with anything. But I think even the people on the left are going to see that this is what's coming, and there's not much of a way around it. So let me start with how we're going to fix this election. Joe Biden, who I love for all the great work he's done to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, because when Donald Trump walked out of the office in Washington, D.C., we needed somebody to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. I joked some time back about the importance of somebody that would really understand what had happened here and could go against Trump. But I also said that it really wouldn't matter. If it were a ham sandwich, it would be good enough, because that would be safer than another 4 years of Donald Trump. As it turned out, we got Joe Biden, who not only put Humpty Dumpty back together again domestically, but he did one of the most important things in the history of the world, which is he maintained NATO. And believe me, without NATO, we would be sunk. This would be a horrible world. We would be in enormous trouble. 75 years after World War II, we avoided nuclear war. We did it because of John Kennedy. We did it, I have to say, I hate to say the name Lyndon Johnson, but yes, Lyndon Johnson, even he kept us alive. Ronald Reagan, standing with NATO, kept us alive. Jimmy Carter did before Reagan. Look, we followed exactly what we were supposed to do after Cordell Hull and Harry Truman, based on the original ideas that came from Franklin Roosevelt, after they joined with George Marshall and saved the world by restoring the dignity of Germany and Japan after we crushed those two countries, which we had to do. We had no choice, and we did it. And in the meantime, we rebuilt both Germany and Japan and created the greatest alliance of democratic-based countries in the history of the world. So all of that put together over 75 years and maintained by all of these presidents. And then we come to Donald Trump, who thought, because he's a psychopath, he could tear up the entire world. Now, I don't know what deal he's got with Vladimir Putin, but I'm sure that we're going to find out. But here's the upshot of all that I'm telling you 10 minutes into the show tonight. The next president of the United States almost assuredly will be Kamala Harris. And let me tell you why. First, we all saw what happened on TV at that debate. And Joe Biden has been really excellent over the 3.5 years of his presidency. But we all know that there were doctored videos that made him look like there was something wrong with him. The problem is that I think now it's pretty much agreed that there is something wrong with him. And it's nothing terrible. It's just old age. There is no cure for old age. I had a friend that always told his mother, his 93-year-old mother, that there was no cure for old age. And there just isn't. And poor Joe Biden, you know, unlike people who I've talked about recently, talked about John Paul Stevens, who was a Supreme Court justice, who quit the court at 91 when he was at the top of his game. He was doing great. And then for 8 more years, he continued to write and speak and be out front in American judicial conversations. And then at 99, the lights went out. But what a life. He lived a fabulous life, and he did great all the way through. It's genetics, you all. There's just not much around it. It's genetics. Thurgood Marshall went to 91. We've got, I talked the other day, Stephen Breyer, who at 83 retired. He was at the top of his game, but he didn't want to take the chance of, you know, a bad result on the Supreme Court, although good luck. But he wanted off, and he got off. And in the meantime, he's 85, and I saw him on TV, and his interview was top of the line. He could have stayed. He could have been there 2 more years, maybe 10 more years for all we know. He just sounds excellent. Joe Biden sounds very troubled cognitively. Now, I know that Donald likes jumping up and down and making fun of people who have cognitive problems. Go take some tests that Ronnie Jackson, who is often called by Trump Ronnie Johnson, gave to Trump. And you know, Trump claims he aced it. It doesn't matter. We know what Mary Trump says about Donald Trump's mental stability, which is that he's in serious trouble. He's got problems. He needs a straitjacket. But listen, Joe Biden's not the man to deal with that in 2024. How do we know? Well, obviously, I don't really know, but I know this much. Aside from the fact that starting the last couple of days, there have been conversations coming out about people who love Joe Biden, who have been in meetings with him in the last couple of weeks, and who have said that he has seemed troubled, that he seemed like he was slipping, that he seemed like he was having trouble saying the things that he wanted to say. And that's a rumor. So put the rumor aside, because I want to talk about something that's not a rumor. And this is a man named Richard Haws. Richard Haws was the head of the Foreign Affairs Magazine. Foreign Affairs Magazine, an important group of political scientists who have written about foreign affairs going all the way back to 1923, 101 years old. And believe me, if you hook up to that magazine online and go investigating throughout history, all of the different things written there, you will get a background in foreign policy that will just blow you away. You'll know about American foreign policy because it's all in Foreign Affairs Magazine. Well, anyway, Richard Haws was the head guy, at the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the group that puts all this together. And here's the deal. He's now emeritus. So he's passed it on to another guy and he's moved on. He's doing a lot of commentary on MSNBC. And he also advises Joe Biden, who has been his friend for 50 years. And Richard Hawes this morning convinced me of exactly what I believe the Democratic Party is beginning to conclude. And that is that even if Joe Biden could hang in throughout this campaign, the chances of him being perfect, able to handle the problems of the United States for the next 4 years until he's 86 years old, pretty low, not likely. This is one of Joe Biden's best friends. This guy, it pained him so much to say this, but he knows Joe Biden well. So let's put that aside for the moment, because if Joe Biden can't be president for 4 years, then we don't need to have him running a campaign, especially if he can't handle the pressures. And I think we saw the other day that Joe Biden can't handle the pressures. Now, people in the campaign and in his family say, you can't define a man by 90 minutes of his life. Well, true enough. But if that 90 minutes showed that there is a significant decline in this man's ability to handle the problems that surround the presidency of the United States, well, then we need to think very carefully about what we're going to do next. So here's next. We got a bunch of people in the Democratic Party that could run for president, some really good people, including Kamala Harris. But there's a problem. There is a convention coming. And when that convention comes, Joe Biden is going to be picked. That's the rules. Joe Biden's going to be picked unless he stands up and says, I quit. And if he does, it will throw open this convention to chaos. And then when it's over, the money that has been accumulated for this campaign will not go automatically to the person that they pick. So this is extremely problematic unless Joe Biden hangs in for 2 weeks, goes through the convention, gets picked, and then the Democratic Party turns around and hands the presidency to Kamala Harris, which is how it would work. Kamala Harris would have all the control of the money because that's the law. And the campaign would move forward with Kamala Harris as president, nominee for the Democratic Party, and whoever she picks to be vice president. Probably wouldn't be Gavin Newsom. First of all, there's a feeling against having them come from the same state, despite the 12th Amendment, which sort of cleared up this business about people coming from the same state. But I say sort of because it's not total. There are some potential problems with it, not certain. And then beyond that, Gavin Newsom wants, I'm sure, to be president on his own, except he's friends with Kamala Harris and he's such a good guy that he probably would not stand up against his friend, and therefore Kamala would be it. And so assuming he doesn't want to be vice president, then the next possibility, maybe Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania, because don't forget, to win the presidency, you need Pennsylvania. And Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, is excellent and could be his own presidential candidate, which, let's face it, if you're going to be the vice president, you're supposed to be capable of standing in to be president. So all of that surrounding these discussions about what could happen to Joe Biden. And then furthermore, you've got a situation out here where there is a real campaign to be run. And Kamala can run this campaign. I've been watching her for the last 3 weeks very closely because she has been put out front in ways that we had not seen before. And her performance has been stellar. I'm not talking about okay. And I'm not talking about a ham sandwich in order to get rid of Donald Trump. I'm talking about somebody who could legitimately be a great president of the United States, somebody that could inspire the country, young people, everybody. And we know that Donald Trump isn't going to inspire anything but insanity and chaos. That we know. We know he can yell. We know he can scream. We know he can act nuts. But he can't inspire confidence among any people. And let's face it, the rest of the world is out here trying to figure out what they're going to do. And in the meantime, you've got a situation in France that is staring us right in the face, which is the return of neo-Nazis to running France for the first time since World War II under Vichy. This is scary stuff. And there's a further election process that's going to occur in France. And I know that Macron thought that he could easily get back control with this progressive group. And I'm sure one of the reasons he thought that is because there's an election coming in Great Britain. And in that election, there's no doubt about it. The Labour Party, the left-wing party, center-left in Britain, is going to win. I mean, they're going to win by a landslide. And so I assume that Macron thought that he could somehow hook up to that frame of mind. And then also look at what happened in Poland. Poland did the same thing, pulled itself away from all that right-wing neo-Nazi stuff and ended up with a very progressive, terrific government that is running things in Poland. So, yes, we've got some problems around the world. We've got Viktor Orban. We've got Lukashenko and, you know, one of those countries. I'm not even thinking about it anymore. I'm Joe Biden. But in Europe, Northern Europe, and then, of course, we've got Belarus. And then we've also got certainly Putin, and then Xi, and then Kim Jong-un and the Ayatollahs. So, you know, we got a problematic world in front of us, and we need a really well-prepared president. And I can tell you this, and this is one of the great things, too, about Joe Biden. Give him this credit. When you see what you get with Kamala Harris, Joe Biden has helped to prepare Kamala for what is about to be put in her lap. Could be, unfortunately, in a way, if you feel bad for Joe Biden. But frankly, I don't, in one way. And that is, he got to be president. He did a great job. He really saved both the United States and the world. And now he's going to do what he said, I believe, do what he said in the beginning, which is turn this over to a newer generation. And the Republicans will scream and they'll be angry and they'll threaten and they'll say all kinds of things. But Kamala Harris is a young person with great sense who is going to step into this government, I believe, in a way that will be so impactful and so inspiring that a lot of people around the world who have been fearful of Donald Trump will turn back around and say, you know, America came through it. And I think that's where we're going to be. I think we're going to come through it. I think we're going to come through it with strength. And I think it's going to be with Kamala Harris running the show. And I remind everybody, although Kamala Harris is very accomplished in government and had a great 3.5 year learning process as vice president, aside from all of that, she is a very smart woman. And she has been very tough in politics in California. She came against Joe Biden. She couldn't win, but everybody can't win. But now she's going to stand up in a way that I believe is going to truly change the direction of this country further to the left, for sure, ways that I will appreciate. But she's not going to be harmful to people on the right either. I think she's seen the value of Joe Biden trying to work with Republicans as he did in order to get legislation passed, infrastructure legislation, healthcare legislation, chips for technology, that legislation. I mean, this man did a ton and at the same time held together the greatest international partnership in the history of mankind, which is NATO. So she's had the opportunity to learn through all of this, and I think it's going to benefit her tremendously, as I believe you'll see when she takes over the Democratic nomination after the convention in Chicago. So, yes, I think there are many things that you're going to see here that are going to be astounding. And here's another reason why I believe this is the case. Besides everything I already said, if Joe Biden were capable of standing up right now and showing that he's strong enough to stay and run a campaign against Donald Trump, he'd be doing it right now. They would have let him loose and they would have said, Joe, you had one bad night, no problem. Get out here and show people what you've got. Instead, yeah, he can still read a teleprompter very well. He's not completely destroyed. It's nothing like that. But he's on the downturn. And on the downturn, at this point in our presidential history, is not a good thing. And by the way, on the downturn, let's clarify this again. 154, Joe said 158, but it's 154. 154 scholars who routinely judge year after year who are the best presidents in history came together last year, and they said that again, which they've been saying for the last 3 years, that Donald Trump was the worst in history. The worst. Every time. Always the worst. Now, Joe Biden, they picked at number 14. Go look it all up online. It's very interesting. And I think you'll learn a lot just by reading what those 154 scholars said about great presidents and the history of the presidency. Now, that brings me to something that I wanted to talk about tonight anyway, because this happens to be the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Law, the 1964 Civil Rights Bill, which was no easy thing to pass, but it passed because of, and this is hard to even get out of my mouth, because of Lyndon Johnson. You know, Lyndon Johnson was a racist. He came from Texas. He was a very powerful senator from Texas. He had a history of being anti-black. You had to be in Texas. That's how you got elected. This is the South. Johnson was no great guy, except he was unbelievable in terms of his abilities in running the Senate, which he did for some time. And I just want to give you a few minutes here to listen to, not my friend, but certainly Lyndon Johnson, a man who practically destroyed our country through Vietnam, but did amazing things in civil rights. Here we go.
Our most immediate tasks are here on this hill. First, no memorial oration or eulogy could more eloquently honor President Kennedy's memory than the earliest possible passage of the Civil Rights Bill for which he fought so long.
That was President Lyndon B. Johnson just days after President Kennedy was assassinated, urging Congress to take action on the late president's civil rights bill. Months later, Congress passed the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and hours after it passed, President Johnson signed it into law. 60 years ago today. Afterwards, President Johnson called on the country to fulfill its founding promise that all its citizens were created equal.
Okay. Oh, wait, wait, wait. I'm sorry.
Every public official, every religious leader, every business and professional man, every working man, every housewife, I urge every American to join in this effort to bring justice and hope to all our people and to bring peace to our land.
Okay, now you can take it off. Yeah, and again, I just want to remind you, that man was a racist. This is not me just yelling out names. Lyndon Johnson spent his whole life working on the side of the South against this kind of legislation. But he brilliantly, as a very smart political person, took this opportunity to step into the shoes of John Kennedy and did something that maybe nobody else could have done. Maybe Kennedy couldn't have even done it. I mean, I talked yesterday, and I know it really upsets people when I talk about how white people would have done anything to stop black people from going to restaurants with them, from going to swimming pools, movie theaters, and so forth. And there's no question. We fought over this. Jim Crow years and so forth. This was not an easy thing to do, but it was accomplished by Lyndon Johnson, a racist. He did it. He fixed it. He used John Kennedy's name, and he used that to change the direction of American history and to truly add to the inspiration of John Kennedy, which there's no getting around it. I mean, John Kennedy inspired people that, I mean, to this day, we were all kids and now we're plenty old. But I can tell you right now that the inspiration that carried in that baby boomer group through the work of John Kennedy and then the additional efforts of Lyndon Johnson to extend what Kennedy tried to do, unbelievable, changed the United States. Now, here we are trying to turn it all back. And I'm going to talk all about that in a moment after we sell some great dinners that you will want to definitely have at Wendy's in Chesterfield. Wendy's is just incredible. I'm not just saying that. They are. They have certainly wings that everybody loves. And that's important because even if I don't like wings, the people who love wings love Wendy's. In addition, they've got smoked meats. They've got hamburgers and cheeseburgers and patty melts. And they've got pizza. They've got salads. I mean, this is just a great place to eat, and everybody enjoys the atmosphere. I love it, but I especially love the baby back ribs and the onion rings because that's just, for me, good food. And those baby back ribs, I mean, that's great protein. I love it. Wendy's is the place to go for all this great food. 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road. Ben and his wife have just done a fabulous job of making this thing work and just really causing people to want to go there and just enjoy the fabulous food at Wendy's. Now, if you're wanting more than just some great food in Chesterfield Valley, you might want to head on to Defiance, where you can get the same great food at Wendy's, and that's the Wendy's Roadhouse in Defiance, $29.99, South Highway 94. I promise you, the food is excellent. You won't be sorry. Just make sure you get yourself out to Wendy's. And I know I spoke with Ray Hartman when he was up here. We've got some plans to try to work with Ben to set up a get-together for people where everybody can come to Wendy's and talk politics and hear all about what Ray Hartman wants to do, which is, of course, take over from Ann Wagner. But the main thing is food, F-O-O-D, and it's good. That's Wendy's in Chesterfield Valley and Defiance. Now, if you're looking for great jewelry, you need to get to 4506 Hampton, which is Jewels on Hampton. And Jewels on Hampton is more than just the name of a store. It's Al and AJ, father and son. They run a great business. They're very friendly, nice people. If you're looking for jewelry, you're going to want to talk to Al. He'll just be somebody that you'll love. And really, all the people there are great. They've got cases on top of cases on top of cases filled with jewelry, and they help you to design jewelry. They'll do it themselves. They'll do it your way. Anything that you want, they'll make it happen when it comes to jewelry for you at Jewels on Hampton. And again, like I've been saying, if you spend just so long there that on the way out, you happen to look at your watch to see what time it is, and you realize your watch is broken, don't worry, because they'll fix your watch too at Jewels on Hampton, 4506 Hampton. You will love Al and AJ and Jewels on Hampton. Now, I can tell you, as I always do, that I like to dress nice. If you go to my website, talkstl.net, you will see on there it says, how does Kaysen continue to dress so nice? And one of the reasons that it's said that way is because, you know, left to myself, I wear terrible stuff. I mean, I used to buy things at the Goodwill when I was a hippie. You know, we dressed crazy and I loved it. But then I grew up and started wearing suits. And then I ended up at the St. Louis Suit Company, and I knew that it was the best place I had ever gone for suits. Suits and shirts and shoes, overcoats. You know, these days I try to look human, but those ties are the best of all. $5 for a great tie that is just excellent. I mean, everybody that sees the ties, after they hear the story about the St. Louis Suit Company, they say, wait a second, that tie's $5? And I say, yeah, $5, silk tie. And they go, what'd you say that address is? Where's that place? Well, it's in Clayton, and it's just a great place to buy suits and shirts and ties. And, of course, if you're getting married, they are the top of the line for helping people to find wedding attire. That's, you know, they're famous for it. At the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. Okay, so let's move on to where we are in 2024 at this point on our way, I believe, to a new presidential nominee to take on Donald Trump, who won't slip in a debate, who won't sound like maybe there's a problem because maybe there is a problem. No, she's going to be extremely tough, and she's going to make Donald Trump cry. You watch. Donald will cry. And I know he thinks that he's got the Supreme Court in his pocket And you know, here's another thing. You talk about decency. Right now, based on what the Supreme Court decided, don't look at me and tell me that this isn't true, because it is true, and everybody knows it, and they're all talking about it right now. The President of the United States today, Joe Biden, could announce this afternoon that he is sending SEAL Team 6 to kill Donald Trump. And guess what? It would be legal. It would be legal under the new decision. It's an official act. The president could say, I'm protecting democracy, and that would be the end of Trump, and it would be the end of all the problems of the United States. But here's the thing. We don't do that. That's not us. We don't kill people. Donald may think to himself, wow, I can start killing everybody. But see, Joe Biden won't. It's just not what we are. It's not our democracy. We're not going to kill our political rivals. But he could. He could. He could call an official act, and it would be. And under the Supreme Court decision, that would be the end of it. Joe Biden could walk away, and Donald Trump would be gone with the wind. But again, we don't do that. We're not going to do it. But it is important to understand that the Supreme Court has brought us to that place where we are no different than Russia, China, Iran. We can do it under the law today. But we're not going to stick with this, because we don't elect kings. We elect presidents who are supposed to abide by the law. And the law in this country is supposed to be based on precedent. Of course, Congress passes law, but at the same time, the Supreme Court decides on important landmark cases, and those precedents, they determine the direction of our country, how we run our government, how people work together, how different agencies work together to bring us the things that we need in order to live every day. I mean, that's American government. It's democracy within a republic, and it works. And it certainly has worked for 240 years until we came up with this nonsense, which we don't do as a country, but we did it. I say we're going to fix it, and I think that Kamala Harris is the one to do it, and we'll find out about that as we roll along. Let me ask you to do this, Joe. If you could put up first the dissent from Sonia Sotomayor, which came out yesterday. Let's look at that. That's the other one. That's all right. So here is what Sonia Sotomayor said. And you should get this. I read these decisions all the time. I had a constitutional law professor at UCLA who took us through these things, and I really learned how to understand what the Supreme Court was doing. And one place that you can go, by the way, to also learn more is a place called SCOTUS Blog, S-C-O-T-U-S, Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUSblog.com. And they'll tell you everything. But you still need to read the cases and have an understanding of what's going on. Here's what Sonia Sotomayor said yesterday. Today's decision to grant former presidents criminal immunity reshapes the institution of the presidency. It makes a mockery of the principle fundamental to our Constitution and system of government that no man is above the law. Relying on title more than its own misguided wisdom about the need for bold and unhesitating action. because that's what the Supreme Court says, that presidents need to be bold and unhesitating. I think they need to read Arthur Schlesinger's book called The Imperial Presidency, written decades ago. But again, I guess some of those people don't know anything about history, but perhaps they'll take this opportunity. Anyway, by the president of the immunity, he asked for more and more. Because our Constitution does not shield a former president from answering for criminal and treasonous acts, she said, I dissent. And believe me, her scathing dissent is something you ought to read, including the words, furthermore, from Justice Jackson and Justice Kagan. I mean, they joined with Sotomayor and produced some of the most important words you're ever going to find at the Supreme Court. And trust me, this court has overturned four or five key precedents, which they promised they weren't going to do. They start off, they weren't going to do Roe v. Wade. Now they're doing everything they can to destroy the legacy of Earl Warren. But it's not going to last for long. And again, we need a strong president to stand up and fight this. And we're about to get one. And let's go to the next thing that I gave you, Joe, please. Okay, so this is from actually one of the Supreme Court justices who joined with the majority to come up with this idiotic idea, which would actually allow Joe Biden to kill Donald Trump this afternoon if he wanted to, but he won't. And she wrote a lot of important things here. I'm not going to read everything, but let's take a look at some of this. Stability, therefore, according to Amy Coney Barrett, is less attributable to the doctrine of stare decisis, which is precedent, than to the fact that the Constitution does not require the court to identify, much less rectify, every constitutional mistake. Understand what that means. It means that when you've got a case that comes up, you're supposed to address the problem in the case. You're not supposed to overturn all the laws that have ever been written by Supreme Court justices and thereby create total uncertainty. Remember what it said at the beginning, stability. That's the basis for our constitutional law. And these justices have created the opposite of that. They've created vast and dangerous instability because what they're trying to do is not simply fix a case that comes to them that maybe has a dispute that needs to be solved. What they're doing is trying to use various disputes that show up at the court in order to fix what they think was bad law that goes all the way back to 1960, 1970, under Earl Warren, who, of course, when I was a kid, you went around California, license plates everywhere said, impeach Earl Warren. And believe me, it was because white people hated the fact that Earl Warren had put black people into everybody's lives in a way which really lived up to the words of the United States of America. But a lot of people didn't like that. And so they really hated Earl Warren. And even Eisenhower said Earl Warren was the biggest mistake that he ever made in everything that he ever did in government. Anyway, she goes on to talk in here about different things, and she gets to originalism, which is really the basis for conservative ideas on the court. And she says, originalism does not obligate a justice to reconsider non-originalist precedents. And if reversal would cause harm, a justice would be foolhardy to go looking for trouble. Wow, she should have heard those words that she wrote 8 years ago. And then she went on to say, Justice Scalia didn't. As he once quipped, I am a textualist. I am an originalist. I am not a nut. Wow, great words from somebody who, and you can take it down now, Joe. Thank you very much. Great words that came from both Amy Coney Barrett and from Scalia, Antonin Scalia, who was best friends with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Best friends. This is a lesson that this country needs to learn in a very, very important way, and which I think we're on our way now to fixing this, to learning the lesson, to finding ways to live together and without Donald Trump. And by the way, you know, Donald Trump was supposed to be sentenced on July 11th. And that sentencing has now been moved up to September the 18th. And that happened this afternoon. Judge Mershon has agreed to hear the briefing from both sides with Donald Trump claiming now that the Supreme Court case that was just decided should cause Mershon to throw out that case, that his conviction would be thrown out and Donald Trump could walk away no longer being a convicted felon. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Judge Mershon is going to listen. He's going to hear what both sides have to say. He is going to be a responsible judge. He is going to listen to the arguments. And one of the biggest arguments he's going to hear is that there were some pieces of evidence that were allowed in at this trial, which wouldn't have been allowed in under the decision that was made yesterday by the Supreme Court. And that's probably true. Some of it would not have been allowed. But then it's going to be up to the judge to decide, and I'm sure what he's going to say. And it's going to be up to the judge to decide whether that evidence was crucial to Donald Trump being convicted. Because if Mershon looks at it and says, there's this, 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 and this, which would be allowed under the current case that was just announced yesterday. Well, if that's what he decides, and if the judges and justices in the future hear this case on appeal, which will take 2 years, and it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they look at it, and they're going to say the same thing. I mean, believe me, this is not the end of the United States. The decisions and the methods for making decisions in the United States are not going to be changed by what happened here. And also, because Donald Trump in 2 years is not going to be president of the United States, and he won't be, it's the same thing I always said. A ham sandwich would be good enough to beat this guy. And as it turned out, Joe Biden was the ham sandwich that got him in 2020. So now I'm going to tell you, Joe Biden turned out not to be a ham sandwich. He turned out to be actually a great president, according to the scholars, probably the 14th best in the history of the United States. That's pretty good. And Donald Trump continues to be the worst, the absolute bottom, the worst president in the history of the United States. Joe Biden, coming out of that fog, definitely got that one right. And he did point that out correctly. He thought it was 158 or 159 scholars. It turned out to be 154. But in any case, the next president of the United States, and I am predicting, I think you'll see, I believe that it will be Kamala Harris. We'll see how that works out. But I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that by that time, what you're going to find is that Donald Trump will be a memory. As I've always said, Donald Trump's going to end up in the same place as Joe McCarthy, deposited on the trash heap of history, because it's where this guy belongs. He's a psychopath. He's certainly not somebody that would inspire anything in this country but chaos. And I think when he is put next to Kamala Harris, who is going to come across as a tough, smart, respectful political leader, I think the country is going to quickly run to her. And for those out there who are looking at some numbers and saying, she can't win, she's 2, 3, 4 points behind Trump right now. Relax. Yes, by some polls, Joe Biden and Kamala are both 2, 3, 4 points behind Donald Trump. That's a fact. That's before a real campaign. And see, that's what's going to happen here. No one is going to allow poor Joe Biden to embarrass himself, because Joe is a good man, a respectful man, a caring and empathetic person who has shown himself to be a great leader of the United States. The only thing he hasn't been able to do is he hasn't been able to inspire people, young and old, because, well, I think he's got some limitations. Certainly not in terms of governance, but in terms of communication. And I think what you're going to find is that Kamala is going to step up and be a very fine communicator, which she's always been throughout her life, through her entire political history. She has been outstanding. And now she's going to stand on the back of the accomplishments of Joe Biden. And she is going to offer to the public solutions to problems, ways of looking at the United States that really have not been thought about in a long time. You know, maybe it was too much for Joe to take on, and especially since he was worried about working with Republicans. Well, I'm not saying she won't. She will, but she's tough. And I think she's going to bring Republicans to a position of having to respond. And I think there's going to be a degree of sympathy that's going to be at her back in support of her. Sympathy for Joe Biden, not just as an ex-president that had to leave, but as a good person who cared about the United States of America, showed that he cared. And I think that when he has to leave, the people will understand why. And I think they're going to support Kamala Harris in ways that they've wanted to be able to support a president, but which, you know, maybe wasn't possible with Joe Biden because his communication skills just weren't there. But there are a lot of people in this country who know how to communicate. There are a lot of people in this country who can extemporaneously talk in front of a microphone, in front of reporters, in front of world leaders, who can take on criticism, who can respond to it, who are very tough on their feet and fast and clever. And I think you're going to find that all of that is part of Kamala Harris and part of what we're going to see in this country as we move into this election. Right now, I'm going to move out of the studio until I come back tomorrow for Wendy's, for the St. Louis Suit Company, for Jewels on Hampton, I'm Mark Kaysen. This is Showdown. Good night.